Together we are building the fair society in this place and in this generation. It's the mission of our times, the fair society, the cause that drives us on. And we will win, not for the sake of our party. Together we will win for the sake of our country. Thank you very much.
That was Gordon Brown receiving a standing ovation after what was dubbed a make-or-break speech that will decide whether he can remain as Prime Minister. I'm Nick Watt, and this is Politics Weekly, coming to you this week from Manchester Central, the refurbished railway station which is hosting the Labour Party conference. In today's programme, we'll be asking whether Brown pulled it off and whether he has seen off the plotters. Joining me to discuss these matters is Polly Toynbee, the Guardian columnist. Polly recently suggested that perhaps it's time for Brown to move on. Hello, Polly.
Hello.
We have Toby Helm, the Whitehall editor of The Observer. Hello, Toby.
Hello.
And finally, we have Tom Clark, the Guardian leader writer. In earlier life, Tom worked for the Health Secretary, Alan Johnson, who made clear over the weekend that he will support David Miliband if there is a leadership contest. Hello, Tom.
Hello there.
Welcome to you all.
As we gather here today, I know people have real concerns about the future of the country, about the future of the economy, and people in this hall have concerns about the future of our party too. And so I want to answer your questions directly, to talk with you how, amidst all the present difficulties, we should be more confident than ever that we can build what I want to talk to you about today, a new settlement for new times, a fair Britain for the new age. But let me start with something I hope you know already. I didn't come into politics to be a celebrity or thinking I would always be popular. Perhaps that's just as well. No, 25 years ago, I asked the people of Fife to send me to Parliament to serve the country I love. And I didn't come to London because I wanted to join the establishment, but because I wanted to, and I want to, change it.
Gordon Brown delivering what is generally seen as the most important speech of his life. Polly, I'm going to turn to you first. You concluded your Guardian column on the 6th of September with the following words. Unseating a Prime Minister is very high risk, but a dying party should be ready to take dangerous medicine if that's the last chance left. Does the Labour Party still need to take that dangerous medicine after Gordon Brown's speech?
That'll be for the people to decide until we see at the end of this conference season and perhaps a bit further along the line whether people's views of Gordon Brown have changed as a result. We really don't know. It's not for columnists to say. But if a party goes on, you know, lagging at kind of 20 points in the poll, as they were in a polling Observer poll last weekend, and nothing changes, then a speech doesn't make a big difference. There are a few times in history when speeches really do. This depends what the public see of this, what they make of it, and whether they are prepared to think again about him.
But what did you think of the speech?
I thought it was the best speech of that I've ever seen him make, without a doubt. It covered the waterfront, it flowed beautifully, and it walloped the Tories in a very satisfying way, very very forensically, sharply. It lobbed grenades down their chimneys one by one. I thought George Osborne was made mincemeat of, called him an apprentice, in favour of apprentices, but, this was not a job to be learning on. And I think when he produced a deadly quote of George Osborne's, when he'd said that it's a function of financial markets that people make loads of money out of the misery of others. That was a spectacularly good use of that. And also when he finally saw off the Conservatives by saying, we did fix the roof when the sun was shining, and gave a long list of everything Labour had done, that produced a roar in the hall, and it was a very good hit.
So, Toby Helm, Polly Toynbee says that Gordon Brown walloped the Tories. Polly was impressed. What does the Whitehall editor of The Observer think?
Well, I agree with Polly that he walloped the Tories, and I thought that was the point at which the speech did achieve lift-up. I thought it was phenomenally boring until then, actually. A lot of very woolly philosophy, which I don't think engaged the audience at all, and certainly won't engage the public. I mean, I think his task here was to show people out in the country what he's about. And I think the speech probably delivered a couple of sound bites. There was the one about the novice. There's the one about we did mend the roof while the sun was shining. They were good lines. They'll come across well on TV. They'll come across well on radio. But I thought the speech as a whole was a bit dreary.
So, Tom Clark, what did you think?
Well, I thought going into this, expectations had got unreasonably low. People had expected this might be a kind of speech Ian Duncan Smith gave in 2003, where he said the quiet man is turning up the volume pretty much straight before his party unplugged him and turned off his volume completely. Now, Gordon Brown's a much more substantial, much more significant figure than Ian Duncan Smith, and he's reminded of us as all of that today by spelling out again a kind of clear social democratic agenda for the country and spelling out, most importantly, some very clear dividing lines with the Conservatives. It will have worked well in the hall. Whether it's worked in the wider country, though, I don't know. Not many people listen to speeches. And in the end, whether it's good for Labour or not will turn on the question of whether it makes it more likely he'll stay or he'll go. And today it probably looks more likely he'll stay after that speech.
Well, I caught up with the Northern Ireland Secretary, Sean Woodward, after the speech, and I began with a hard-hitting question to Sean. I said, did your boss do the job?
Yes, he did. I think it was a great speech. I think people's expectations varied widely as to what would happen. I always felt that he would make a great speech today, and I think if you go around the hall, you'll find everybody enthused, but not just by the way he dealt it, which I think was extremely good. I think by the substance. Fundamental part of the speech was about the new settlement, and I think this is a really interesting way of helping people understand what's happening out there. We've got extraordinary changes taking place in the world. It's bewildering at best to those of us who are trying to understand it. And if you're trying right now to manage on an incredibly tight budget, if you're worrying about your job, worrying about your house, worrying about what's going to happen about your kids or your elderly parents, why is this happening to us? And that's a question that we've heard posed for a long time. But equally, I think what the downturn has done is to really focus people's minds on it in a way that's made them really worried. And I think what Gordon set out was a way of understanding the narrative of what's happening in these times.
That was Sean Woodward saying that Gordon Brown has finally found his voice by outlining a new narrative known as the New Settlement. So, Polly, you are The Guardian's chief policy wonk. Tell us about these policies. No prescription charges if you're suffering from cancer, no charges for people suffering long-term conditions, and enshrining the abolition of child poverty in law. What did you think?
Well, I think the really crucial one was the one, he only gave it to one line, and most people won't have noticed it. And the enshrining abolition of child poverty in law is a way of nailing down a Labour policy to the floor, so that if the Tories do come in, they're going to have to actually repeal the law. And I think that's really interesting. If they're forcing a future government to make progress on abolishing child poverty, that's significant and quite brave.
Tom Clark, when you were a special advisor with this government, you grappled with some of these issues. What did you think of the various policy announcements, that one on child poverty and other ones on health?
I think the child poverty move is very smart indeed, because I think now Labour is into a stage where it needs to worry about how it's going to, as Labour people would put it, Tory-proof the policy. I don't know how it will work. To be honest, I don't know how the climate change bill will work either. It's the same kind of thing. It's putting in place mechanisms and pressures in law, which is all you can do to hope that governments do the right things in future. I have a slight nagging feeling about the free prescription charges for people who are suffering from cancer, which will have been hugely popular in the hall. And, of course, it would be a crazy thing to be against. But what worries me is we're just having an argument at the moment about whether people might have to start paying for certain life-saving drugs in the NHS. And it seems to me if we've got money to spare, we should spend it on making those drugs available rather than making other drugs cheaper.
Toby Helm, let me just ask you, one of the points that Sean Woodward was making there is that this is a list of policies in a framework, the new settlement. How do you see that? Do you see that there is now finally a coherent Brown voice?
Well, I mean, he's speaking, he's representing the underdog, isn't he, Gordon Brown? I mean, he's saying, I'm on your side, I'm on the side of the ordinary voter. Please forgive me for the 10p tax thing. That was a policy mistake. That was quite an interesting, humble admission from Gordon on that, I thought. But it was packaged well today. I thought it was emotionally put. I thought it was interestingly put. But it's not a particularly eye-catching new idea that Labour represents the underdog. It's just restated, repackaged, and quite well delivered. But I didn't think there was anything particularly new philosophically.
I thought there was a hint of something. It's not new, but it's pulling out a theme that's happened since banks have been crashing out of the air. The new settlement is, we are the party that knows everybody needs strong government, even bankers need strong government. The Conservatives don't, and he kept quoting the Times when they said, you know, less regulation and all that. I mean, leave aside the fact that actually Gordon Brown has been the great deregulation, less regulation man. Nevertheless, he's drawing a line on his own financial past. This is the new settlement.
Yes, I think the banking crisis, the economic crisis, has given the chance for him to develop that idea of we are the party that believes in government and the Tories don't. So I completely agree with you there. And in that framework, he can develop that theme. What I'm saying is the basic theme itself is not particularly new or original.
Tom, do you think the world has changed in the last fortnight and this allows people, Gordon Brown, who believe in government as opposed to people who believe in shrinking government, i.e. the Tories, has that created new opportunities?
Yes, I think it has, and I think he's gone some way to taking that opportunity today. I mean, I think it was absolutely essential that he got that sort of semi-apology, which is the nearest thing you'll ever get from Gordon Brown to an apology, about the 10p tax rate at the beginning of his speech. And once he'd laid that down, and he's not really ever done that before, he was in a position to go forward and address the times in which we're living, which are times where banks on Wall Street and in the City of London are now relying and being lubricated by huge amounts of government money. And he was making plain through a number of principles he talked about, transparency, responsibility for board members of banks and so on, that with this right to government assistance they are now enjoying, there's going to be some responsibilities too. And that's something I'm very pleased that he's decided to say.
And they're quite weak ones. Yeah. They're not terrifically rigorous. A lot of people will say, and Adair Turner may be one of them, of the new head of the FSA, that this is quite weedy stuff. A bit of transparency ain't going to fix it.
Well, it wasn't. I thought the stronger part, I mean, transparency is something Gordon Brown always talks about, it's true, but he talks about responsibility, and it sounded to me, of course we don't yet know, he's not in a position where he's worked out what the policies are, but it sounded to me like he had in mind some sort of civil or criminal responsibility for people who don't play by the rules, who are running banks. And it's just nice to hear that kind of language being used about people on banking boards instead of people who are claiming incapacity benefit, which is where it's normally deployed.
And Toby, let me ask you, there was a talk in July after the disastrous by-election loss for Labour in Glasgow East that there'd be a great economic relaunch in the autumn. It sort of went off at half cock earlier this month. Everyone said, well, so what's that all about? We now really have had the chunkiest announcement by the Prime Minister. Do you think he's regained ground? Do you think we are now seeing a relaunch that is as credible as people thought it might be?
I think he'll claw back a bit, yeah. I mean, I think it was a brave performance today just to do what he did with that level of passion. He had a lot of detail in his speech. He thought it through very carefully. I just think he struggles to convey the kind of emotion and passion and to grab his audience like Tony Blair did in every major speech he ever made. But I think people kind of want Brown to succeed. Enough people want Brown to succeed. They basically think he's a good guy. He's a decent man, I think. So I think enough people will give him credit for him to have a bit of a bounce, but not a huge one, is my view.
I think there's a bit of a problem with it. When you come away from it, you would get carried away by a good speech in the hall, but when you come away from it, what really is the headline? What is the news? I mean, there are gems, there are episodes, there are some really good things, and there are some rather minor policy, but they're not really headline worthy. I'm slightly wondering whether this is a bit of a Chinese meal.
I don't think it'll get a hugely brilliant press, that's my view.
I remember the warm welcome you gave me and Gordon at conference after our wedding. And I'm so proud that every day I see him motivated to work for the best interests of people all around the country.
So, Polly, what did you think of Sarah Brown introducing her husband, the Prime Minister? The last time we had a big husband and wife moment on a stage was, of course, that kiss involving Al Gore and Tipper Gore at the Democratic Convention in 2000. And we all remember what happened then.
I find it quite yucky. She's delightful, charming, good, but I find it quite yucky. But maybe I'm always behind the curve in the way we have to follow American politics, and maybe that's just the way it is. I thought it was quite clever, cunning of him when he said, I don't use my children as props, which, of course, is exactly using his children as props. So I think, you know, we do go down this road of telling my own story. Last year he told the story about one eye, this year he's told the story about the other eye. I don't think he's got any more eyes to go, but every year it seems every leader has to drag out some personal story, and Gordon's is quite thin. He didn't have that bad a background. He hasn't got a great backstory.
But Tom, isn't the eye, what happened to Gordon Brown, what happened to his eye, pretty fundamental? He lost the sight in one eye after a rugby accident. He almost lost it in the second eye. That obviously had a huge impact on him.
I think it might well have done. I mean, you know, I've not got access to inside Gordon Brown's mind, thankfully, but I wonder whether it made him, on the one hand, more cautious. He'd sort of been in a position where he'd nearly lost, as he'd see it, everything, the sight in both eyes, and also kind of more sort of dementedly hardworking, which he's sort of proved to be over his career. So it probably did have an impact on it. I mean, it sort of doesn't do it for me, but I think, you know, one problem he's had is he seems like a man who just stands up, bangs the drum and gives you lots and lots of numbers and never says sorry. And he's probably got to do some of this stuff, even if it doesn't come naturally.
OK, well, thanks for that. Well, we asked Simon Hoggett, The Guardian's parliamentary sketchwriter, to give us his impressions of Gordon Brown's speech and of the conference week as a whole.
Well, Gordon Brown's speech did the business. It wasn't a great speech, but clearly the conference wanted to love him, and he gave them quite a bit to love. He kicked off by saying he wanted to talk about the real him, and it's my experience that when politicians say they're going to rip us off the facade and expose the real self, the beating heart beneath the public exterior, then they invariably turn out to have a passionate commitment to the cause of equality or fairness, and they never say, I'm in politics because I want power, power for its own sake. Let me tell you about me, I'm paranoid, I see plots everywhere, I'm rather an unpleasant person. It's never like that. The real them always turns out to be idealistic and anxious to do the very, very best for everyone. It's been an interesting one. This is the first conference they've had in many, many, many years in which they haven't been ahead in the opinion polls. There was one when William Hague was Conservative leader, that's how long ago that was, in which they were just a point or two behind the Tories, but that was because of the fuel crisis and the petrol driver strike. So for them to be in not just behind in the polls, but really very badly behind, with a leader who is quite the most unpopular prime minister probably since the war, or certainly since modern polling began, is a very, very unusual experience for them, and they don't quite know how to handle it. There's been rather less of the triumphalism that we had over the past 11 years. But basically, there are two conferences. There's the one on the stage, which is always wildly optimistic and supposed to be inspirational, leading people to a great future. And then there's the real one, which is what people say at the bars and the parties and at the lunch table and so on. There's the one that we've been attending and the one that's in the media. But, of course, the one that's in the media is a little bit more realistic because the media tends to report what politicians are really saying rather than what they claim to mean.
That was Simon Hoggett on The Tale of Two Conferences. So, Polly, we've had two conferences here in Manchester. Unity on the platform with David Miliband lauding the Prime Minister for his inspirational approach to international development. But in the bars, we've witnessed the plotting. Even the Foreign Secretary was overheard saying that he toned down his speech to avoid a Heseltine moment. What is going on?
Well, he's got a great problem about whether to avoid the Heseltine moment or the Portillo moment, going too soon or not at all. As it is at the moment, everybody will just be holding their breath and waiting to see what opinion polls in the next 10 days look like. You know, if Cameron does another even better barnstormer and gets some sort of headline grabbers, will it wash away the warm feeling from Gordon's much better than usual speech today? We don't know, and that's what I mean by saying, really, in the end, the people decide, the polls decide. And if his polls don't get a lift, and if he loses badly again in Glenrothes, I think all the knives will be out again within a few months.
So, Toby Helm, the knives could be out in a few months, but we're all holding our breath to see what is going to happen in the opinion polls. What do you think is going on in the Labour Party?
Well, I think gradually over the next few weeks you'll see the whole plotting revving up again, I'm afraid. And I think that will gather momentum. We have Glenrothes late September, early November.
Good pronunciation.
Correct pronunciation, I think. And I think he'll be in real trouble after that, actually. I think there will be another dreadful moment for Gordon.
So that's interesting, Tom Clark. There is Polly Toynbee saying the knives may well be out. There is Toby pretty clear that something is going to happen. But opinions are divided, aren't they? Some people are saying cabinet ministers will come out in the next few weeks and resign. Other people are saying, no, we need to wait for the European parliamentary elections in June when Labour will be slaughtered. David Miliband doesn't want to take over before that. You used to work for the Labour Party. Can you tell us the secret plan? What is going to happen?
Well, I really think the word plot doesn't describe what's going on. I think what's going on is blind panic at the opinion polls, which are absolutely shockingly awful at the moment. I mean, they really are appalling. There's a small number of people who we know are plotting because they've told us that they're plotting. There's a few other figures in the background, some of the long sort of standard Gordon Brown enemies who are encouraging the idea that this plot is bigger than it is. But what I found talking to ministers, including some who are fairly hostile to Gordon Brown, is that they sort of think something might happen, but they're not involved in making it happen at the moment. And I've started to see, in the way that I think some of us expected might happen, that the goalposts have been moving. So now, whereas we were saying he's going to have to do something by the summer, then it became he's going to have to really do wonderfully at conference. Today I'm hearing people saying, well, I think the key test is going to be the European elections next year. So that doesn't sound like a plot to me. I think there's just lots of people sort of feeling that something should be done, but they're not quite clear what it is, and they're not quite clear what their role is in bringing it about.
Polly, it all sounds a bit sort of tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, and then nothing will happen. Without obviously expecting you to breach any confidential discussions you've had, how serious is this and how senior is the unease?
The unease is very senior. There are a lot of people in the cabinet who are very worried indeed, and they're people who are natural sort of loyalists. They're the sort of people who are rabble rousers for the party. They're not necessarily people who are by nature plotters, though they may be more Blairite, not certainly not Brownite. And I think if things look terrible, they will make a move. Nobody quite knows where or when, but it's one of those things where, you know, a trigger, it could be a by-election, it could just be another poll. Somebody says something, does something, it all skitters out of control, and it happens. There's certainly nobody sitting there, a marshal, sending his first lot of troops over, then his second, then his third. There is no plan. But as you were saying, Tom, it's blind panic is what you feel every time a polling poll comes out.
Now, my next question to Toby is going to involve me saying a word that I probably can't pronounce. Now, Toby, in your job, you are a Kremlinologist. Oh, I got that one right. Tell me, what do you think's been going on with David Miliband? We had him lavishing praise, as we said earlier, on the Prime Minister in his speech. Then we had him afterwards saying, oh, I had to tone down my speech because I didn't want to have a Michael Heseltine moment. We had him calling the Times in for an interview at the weekend, lots of pictures of him in his kitchen, similar treatment in the Daily Mirror. And then Tom Clark's former boss, Alan Johnson, talked about as a possible candidate for Prime Minister, said, David Miliband is my man. Is some sort of operation going on here?
Well, there's definitely an operation. There's been an operation from David Miliband for some time. And I think, I mean, he's not going to be the one who sticks the knife in, or he's not going to suddenly resign or anything like that. But what he is doing is very carefully and very skillfully preparing the way for the moment when Gordon is told by some other cabinet colleagues, or Gordon throws in the towel, David Miliband will be absolutely ready. And actually, I thought one of the things which was intriguing in Gordon Brown's speech today is his mention of it's not time for a novice. Now, you take that as meaning George
absolutely.
Osborne, but that will not have gone without, you know, Damien McBride's knowledge that that actually could also mean 1D Miliband.
And Polly, when it's very interesting, Toby picked up on that it's not time for a novice, and the Prime Minister could have said it's not time for a novice wielding a banana. Toby was saying that David Miliband is performing with skill, but he walked into the conference holding a banana, silly pictures. He was pictured in a sort of a rather embarrassing, awkward smile with the Prime Minister. Is David Miliband that skillful?
I think what's going on behind the scenes is quite skillful, in that I think there's a huge amount of really serious policy work. After all, he was the head of policy in Tony Blair's Downing Street, and he is thinking very hard about really major changes of direction, whether that's about the city or a number of other things. There is real work going on there and real thought. And actually, what Labour needs in order to survive is ideas, and what's been incredibly slim this whole conference. Minister after minister has gone up absolutely robotically, repeating things they could have said in 1996 or 97. There's been no real sense of forward trajectory, and, you know, this renewal in office is not what we've seen.
Yeah, and I think, and that's what the point I was making earlier, that I think the philosophy that Brown outlined today was kind of old philosophy in a new context. But if it had been David Miliband, I think you would have seen a new philosophy. He's really into, he sort of goes to bed reading policy magazines and things, and he thinks very deeply about, you know, what kind of a society do we want for children who grow up with computers and who are massively computer literate. He's a real ideas man. You would have seen philosophy, and Polly's absolutely right. I mean, he's working his socks off to develop these new ideas.
Too much of a
package.
Wonk, do you think? Do you think when he comes out, will be too many isms and too many funny words?
I do, and I think he overthinks about new ideas when they're almost kind of not there. And I think that's the danger. I think he's a bit too much of a nerd.
I mean, Tom, do you think there's a danger, and maybe the media is guilty of this because we tend to do sort of black and white and not grey, that the media, in a sense, has given up on Gordon Brown, and when you give up on one, you fall in love with somebody else. The media is falling in love with David Miliband, and actually what Toby and Polly are saying is he's not perfect.
Well, I think that might be right. I mean, I suppose my biggest single worry about him is if you had him and David Cameron and Nick Clegg, all of them, I think, either 41 or 42... all of them from, in different ways, relatively privileged backgrounds, all of them sort of Oxbridge, I think it would look like a real narrowing of the political class. And I think that's a real issue. And in that sense, Gordon can make the argument now that he's someone with a bit more substance and a bit more background, and he makes a more interesting contrast. There's also been, and some of it I think misplaced, great resistance and great antipathy towards David Miliband from the trade union leaders, simply because he used to work for Tony Blair. They think he's an identikit reproduction of Tony Blair, which he's certainly not, but that's a real problem for him. He's got to show that he's not going to be taking people back to the situation, which, let's not forget, they were fairly unhappy about in 2006. I think that I wouldn't rule out the possibility of someone else standing. I mean, I read with interest what my old colleague Alan Johnson wrote in the Times, and I think some of it was taken out of context, in that it was remarks of a type about David Miliband that he's made many times before, and there they were, because it happened to be on the same day that David Miliband was doing this big interview with the Times. It perhaps had a tiny bit more significance than it might otherwise have done.
So we shouldn't give up on Alan Johnson.
I agree we shouldn't give up on Alan Johnson. I don't think he did rule out standing, actually, in that interview, whereas it was, I can't remember what the precise words were, but
I think he sort of referred back to things that he'd said before rather than saying something new.
I think it's true that if he didn't stand, he would certainly support Miliband, because he does hugely admire him. I think he's pretty determined not to stand. But when things happen, people's arms get twisted. Suddenly he might look like the best compromise candidate, and he would be a very strong candidate, and his backstory would absolutely knock the Tories for six. He's the one they're scared of. And it may be, but all the reasons that people like him are the same reasons that he doesn't really have that kind of ambition. And he looks at Gordon Brown's life, as anybody might, and say, why on earth would I want to be that thing? And, you know, why do I want to restrict my... He's got young children, he likes going to football matches and going around the corner to a restaurant, that kind of thing. Why would you want your life destroyed?
It'd be rather a brilliant end to that wonderful Johnson story, wouldn't it, to end up at number 10? And particularly if you ended up at number 10, having not really wanted to end up at number 10.
It would.
That'd be rather perfect.
Labour would love it.
But, Tom, that's really interesting what Toby says there about a great end to the great career of Alan Johnson if he ends up in number 10. But there is a slight problem, isn't there, Toby says, that he has said he doesn't want it. On Desert Island Disc last year, he not only said, I don't want it, he almost said, I'm not up to it. That's not a great advert for the job, is it?
No, and I think Polly's put a finger on the nub of the issue here, which is that his great appeal is he doesn't seem like a totally obsessive politician. He cares a lot about politics, but he's interested in other things as well, and he quite likes switching off from it sometimes. And if that's the reality, then, you know, there's going to be very big questions about whether he actually wants to do the job.
And how do you think, I mean, we sometimes forget that if there's going to be a Labour leadership contest, Toby, there will be an election through the Electoral College, the three elements of the Electoral College, the MPs, the constituency Labour parties, and obviously the unions. So obviously the union vote is on one member, one vote. Can we predict what will spew out of that machine at the end of it?
Well, I think, well, as far as Miliband's concerned, I think Miliband has got a real problem. The unions absolutely detest him, and they sat on their...
The unions or the union leaders? And the union leaders only have one vote, as do the rest of their members.
Yeah, but they can recommend to their membership how to go on these things, and they will, and they tend to be followed, although not as much as they used to be. by their membership.
The union leaders did recommend against voting for Tony Blair back in 1994, but all the newspapers said it would be a good idea, and that's what the members did in the end.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I do think that there is a fundamental anti-Miliband thing, not just in the unions, but on the left and on the centre-left of the parliamentary party too, and it's very widespread actually. And what is intriguing actually, and what's really damaging for the party, I think, is the way in which he is equated with Blairism. He's a Blairite, and Blairism and Blair, the word Blair is now a dirty word. The man who won them three elections.
Yes, but we've got to remember that the ultra Blairites do exist, and they're very off the leash, and they're much worse than anything Blair ever was. If you listen to of John Hutton now, or Caroline Flint, or sometimes James Purnell on a bad day, they are into reform as almost a sort of privatising endeavour in itself, which I don't think Blair ever quite meant. And so Miliband is cursed in his friends, and they're all rooting for him, and he should really kick them in the teeth, and I think he'll have to, and I think he couldn't possibly win unless he came out with a very much more radical agenda than Gordon Brown. This party here is much more radical. If you had a vote on the floor here about taxing the rich, they'd be 100% for it.
I mean, I don't think Miliband can win, actually, and I've been very shocked by the level of anti-Miliband feeling that there is in the party, and my suspicion is that you could genuinely see somebody come through the middle like Harriet Harman and win. I mean, it's not inconceivable that Johnson doesn't want to stand, Miliband stands and it all goes terribly wrong.
Return of the aristocracy.
Ed Ball stands and bombs, and Harriet of the High Street comes through the middle.
Harriet of the High Street, the niece
she's not
of
the aristocracy.
She's the niece of an earl.
No, she's not
the niece.
Her mother's sister married some earl. This is not
That's
exactly make
posh.
You an anything earl yourself.
That's
if
quite
your
posh,
mother's
isn't it?
Sister, if your mother's sister married, you know, Prince Charles or something, does that suddenly make you royal?
Fantastically royal. I consider myself having blue blood running through my veins, and I'd be very, very happy. Well, look, on that blue blood note, I'm going to say thank you all very much. That's it from this week's edition of Politics Weekly. Visit guardian.co.uk politics for more analysis, audio and video from the Labour Party conference. Thanks to all my guests, the Guardian columnist Polly Toynbee, the Observer's Whitehall editor Toby Helm, and the Guardian leader writer Tom Clark. Politics Weekly was produced by Francesca Panetta. I'm Nick Watt. Join us again in Birmingham next week, where we'll be at the Conservative conference. Till then, goodbye.